Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. Happy New Year. I'm Chris Noyce, and this is a podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, we're focusing on rural shops. That is the 17,000 plus stores that are off the beaten path, typically operating as the only business in that area and absolutely essential to the communities that they served. Last week, we launched the Rural Shop Report formally, which demonstrates a lot of the value that rural shops bring locally, including the services on offer in rural stores, the people working in them, and the entrepreneurs that make all of this possible. I'm really pleased to say that actually the report launch had a fantastic response, not just from members, a huge attendance for the report launch. So many of you listening may have been there yourself, so thank you for attending, but also from government, with some very warm words from Rural Affairs Minister Lord Bennion about the report and rural policy. The report itself is available now on our member portal, along with a recording of the launch event. So for all of that, just go to acs.org.uk, click on member portal to get access to that today. Let's get into the main interview for this edition of the podcast then, and I am delighted to welcome Kerry Booth, Deputy Chief Executive of the Rural Services Network, to have a chat about the importance of rural businesses and what needs to be done to support rural shops in the future. Hi Kerry, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hi there.
Give us a bit of a background about yourself, how you came to the Rural Services Network, and what you guys do day to day.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on with you today. My name's Kerry and I'm the Deputy Chief Executive of the Rural Services Network. My background before I worked here was in local government. I worked for a local council in Devon. I joined them as part of a national graduate development scheme. And then we joined with other councils and had shared services. So I've worked across a number of rural councils. The Rural Services Network, just to give you a bit of background about our organisation, we're the national champion for rural services. So we're a membership organisation and we work on behalf of our members. And those are primarily rural local councils, but we also have over 200 organisations in membership who are everything from housing associations to health trusts to local charities to national charities like Age UK. Big organisations that support those living and working in rural areas.
So for someone who would say the rural life is the ideal, it's what we all strive for, what's the reality of that? Of course, there will be places where that is the case, but what's the sort of purpose of the Rural Services Network? What I'm trying to get at is there an inherent advantage or disadvantage to being in a rural area?
Absolutely. I mean, I live in a small rural village and I love living in my rural area, but that isn't the same necessarily in every area across England. So what we do as an organisation, primarily we started campaigning for fairer funding for rural areas, because actually there are rural areas in our country where there is mass deprivation and there isn't the statistics to support that necessarily in the same way that there are in urban areas, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't still exist. Wage levels in rural areas are generally lower than the national average for jobs, you know, people working in rural areas. There's difficulties around public transport, particularly around accessing affordable housing, accessing health and care services. So we work across a number of those issues, trying to raise the rural voice and make sure that it's heard in Parliament and places where it matters with people making decisions.
Sure. And it's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because the government has recently been talking a lot about its levelling up agenda, and it feels like rural services are sort of one of the original calls for levelling up between rural and other urban areas. Do you think that's been perhaps forgotten or overlooked recently when we come to talk about levelling up?
I think absolutely. It feels like at the moment there's a lot of talk about north and south, and almost that south means they're north versus London, when actually we need to focus more not on big broad brush arguments around north and south or rural versus urban, but understanding some of those differences that exist within our regions. So there's quite a perception that rural areas are kind of chocolate box that you might see on Countryfile, and they're all lovely big houses and we all drive around in 4x4s, but actually there's big areas of our rural community where there is deprivation, and we need to recognise that there are those differences amongst our communities. We're really keen that the government doesn't just become, you know, north versus south or rural versus urban, but we understand the differences within our regions to make sure that those areas where there is deprivation or there isn't the jobs for local people, that we can make sure that those are targeted, and that really is, or that should be, the aim of the levelling up agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can be done then? I mean, we're talking to you around the launch of our rural shop report, but I also noticed that the Rural Services Network have its revitalising rural report as well. What are the main recommendations? Because we talked about a little bit about services and highlighted a little bit about those services being more than just grocery providers, if you like. What can be done to support those businesses?
Yeah, I mean, we have our Revitalising Rural campaign where we set out a number of policy areas where we're saying the government needs to take action. Because I think the difficulty with this is it isn't an easy one fix, put money into this one area and that will solve everything. There are a number of issues and our campaign tries to highlight all of those. So we have got, for example, work around affordable rural housing, access to services, access to healthcare, the rural economy, connectivity, which is a big issue for our rural areas. So that's broadband connectivity and mobile phone connectivity. And our campaign sets out for each of those areas a number of asks of government. I mean, our overall campaign as an organisation is for fairer funding for rural areas. Every year, successively, different governments have underfunded rural areas compared to urban areas. And when that starts to build up over a number of years, there are differences in how councils can provide services to rural areas because they simply don't have the budget to do so. So, for example, the councils have a pot of money to deliver their services in their rural areas and they have to focus on their statutory services. So money does go on things like social care and some of those discretionary services. I was going to say nice to have. I mean, they're not necessarily nice to have. We want, you know, we need them. Public transport, leisure services, economic development, all of those kind of things that drive people into our rural market towns and our villages. Rural councils don't always have funding to deliver all of their services in the way that they would like to. So
do you think that gap has been widening? If you think about connectivity specifically, we've been doing this rural report for a number of years. Every year, one of the recommendations we talk about is about better connectivity for businesses that are looking to offer services that are online enabled and are struggling because they can't get good connections. If I think sort of 3G through 4G through 5G now, I used to live in a rural area. I couldn't get any G's, no G's. I think it was like Edge was the thing that I could get when I was in my house in a rural area that was, you know, loading a website every 2 or 3 minutes. Is that gap widening? Is that making it harder to make it more appealing to have a rural business? Because you just think, you know, I'm right up against it right from the start here.
I think so. I think particularly the last 18 months to 2 years has really emphasized the importance of connectivity for those of us that have been working from home and homeschooling. You know, if you haven't got adequate connectivity, for example, that I could do a meeting and my daughter could be on a Teams call with school when we were homeschooling, that makes it really difficult and something has to go, whether it's my work or her homeschooling. And I think that can be difficult then for rural businesses. We know that of businesses in the rural economy, a huge number of them are small, medium-sized businesses, often sole traders. And actually, those kind of businesses don't always have the skills and the support needed to really kind of transform their businesses using technology. You know, forget just can they plug it in and can they get signal, but do they then have the skills to use that technology that will really profit their business. So one of the things that we do ask for and one of our campaigning things is about digital skills and making sure everybody has the skills to not just take part in, I guess, normal life online, you know, ordering various goods or applying for things with the government, but actually so that they can develop their businesses. And we saw that actually in the pandemic, it was quite vital for businesses to be able to transform and adapt and do things differently. If people couldn't travel to them, they suddenly wanted people to be able to order online. And if you were in an area without connectivity, you were often then at a disadvantage if you weren't able to do that.
Mm. I mean, and we're about to, you know, come up to another deadline on tax being online. So, you know, these things that not just nice to haves are things that retailers have to be doing. I just want to just touch on another type of connectivity, if you like, and that's connecting the people in rural areas, not just with each other, but with that business. We hear from people running rural shops that's almost one of the most important things, because isolation in rural areas is a real problem. Loneliness in rural areas is a real problem. What are your members telling you specifically, actually probably about the last 2 years through the pandemic, about how much of a difference they've made with those communities that otherwise probably wouldn't be seeing anyone?
Absolutely. I mean, we see them as our village shops as a real lifeline for our rural communities. I think it said in your report that around almost 50% of them are isolated stores, so they don't have other businesses around them. They're not on a big high street. They are sort of the only shop in the village, and they provide a huge lifeline for that village, not just in isolation when you couldn't, people weren't traveling and weren't going to other places to buy essentials, but also they provide a real social perspective to the village. So for example, where I live, I often see people, you know, older people walking to the village shop to buy their newspaper, and they do it every single day. So for them, that bit of social interaction might be the only people that they see in the day. And on the other side of it, I think the people that work in the shops, you know, they know their communities. So they know if Barbara doesn't come in on a Tuesday to pick up her newspaper, and they might send someone, well, maybe we should check on her because she hasn't turned up. You know, they play quite a vital role in supporting our rural communities. So not just in the provision of goods, but in the, you know, the social fabric of that, and making sure that isolation in rural areas isn't such a big thing, helping with that.
That specifically stands out as a huge thing, isn't it? We hear from Age UK, which I think you mentioned were one of the people you work with, that often the interaction in a shop might be the only interaction they have with a person that day. And I've always thought of it from a sort of positive perspective, but you're right. If that happens every other day for 2.5 years, and then suddenly one day it doesn't, that sort of backstop of checking, oh, you know, is Barbara okay? Can we get someone over there or someone to make the call? That's a really important service, isn't it? And that's something that often goes under the radar, I guess.
Absolutely. And we know that in our rural communities, we do have an aging population. So we need to make sure that we do have services in our villages to help, you know, to help support our local community, particularly when there are areas which don't have great public transport. So you can't travel to other places. You know, that one shop that you can access, whether that be for grocery shopping, post office services, you know, actually our village shops offer a whole range of services rather than just, you know, milk and eggs, that actually we need to make sure that that's there and that that's useful for our rural communities.
Mm. So if we go back to some of the policy just for a minute, because we're both working on this, respective organisations, both trying to get a range of recommendations through to help rural businesses. If ministers came to you and said, okay, you can have one thing, and you had to pick one thing that would make the biggest difference, what would that be?
I think the one thing would be fair funding for rural areas. So the government has all sorts of pots of money at the moment that it's developing around levelling up. So the Towns Fund, Community Renewal Fund, those kind of things. But I think actually they're not that much use if generally the way that we fund rural services means we underfund them when compared to urban services. So we need to fix the core way that we fund our services, and then we can start to fix other issues. For example, we need to then fix the connectivity issue. We need to make sure that rural businesses have the right support to help them develop, all of those kind of things. But we really need to sort the fair funding out in the first instance. And we know that government doesn't have infinite pots of money. We just want to make sure that the way we kind of divide the money that they do have is fair to all of those living and working in our rural areas.
Yeah, and it's a really good point, because government talks using buzzwords, I guess, and one of them is high streets, and that really frustrates us, because majority of convenience stores are not operating on a high street. For 10-15% of them are, but if you're in a rural area, then basically none of them are. So parades, villages, individual shops, like you say, when in those funding discussions, in those campaign discussions, they're sort of left out a bit. And we have the same thing over the last couple of years when government talks about supermarkets as a sort of savior of the food industry. So hold on, there's 40 odd thousand shops and 5,000 odd trading in rural areas that are doing a fantastic job. So what about these guys?
Absolutely. And we noticed that with the Towns Fund. So the government set some limits on it. So you could only apply for the Towns Fund if your town had a population greater than, I think it was 15,000 people. Well, actually, we know that there are small rural market towns that serve a huge hinterland. So their population is bigger than that, but they weren't eligible to apply for the fund. And it kind of feels like, well, why are we leaving them behind? Why are we only supporting our bigger towns when actually we're leaving all of that population behind as well that live in our rural areas. You know, everybody should be able to get access to these services. And I think the difficulty is that the government has made decisions in their Towns Fund, Levelling Up Fund, and some of it is based on the statistics, although the statistics for each of those depend on whether you're eligible change, but they've also made it based on political judgments. And then that's when the system becomes unfair, because our rural areas are therefore being left behind.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. So final thoughts then, in the event that ministers don't come to you tomorrow and say you can have something, which
I can have fair funding.
Possibly likely, is there anything that rural shops listening, rural businesses can do of their own accord, or somewhere they can go for support, resources that will give them a leg up on where they are now?
I think it's, as well as the shops, it's the population living in rural areas that need to take action. So we saw over the last 18 months, people did start shopping a lot more locally. People started thinking a bit more about where they're accessing their products from, and shopping locally, thinking about food miles, particularly with all the stuff around decarbonisation. And people need to keep doing that. So we need to not go back to maybe old habits of doing, you know, everything online and shopping in big, you know, out of town places. We need to make sure that we're supporting our rural shops and our businesses in them, so that they can keep on thriving and supporting us, because we've seen the vital role that they've played over the last 2 years in helping our rural communities to survive. So somehow we need to make sure that it's the customers as well that keep going to the rural businesses and keep supporting them.
Yeah, absolutely right. And perhaps one for another day, but also that we've got a supply chain that will continue prioritizing rural stores, and that they don't get forgotten as sort of the first ones off the list when issues occur, because as you say, those people in those communities need those services probably more than a lot of the urban stores.
Yes, absolutely. We need to remember that actually people live in our rural communities. They don't just live there at weekends or in the summer in their holiday homes. People live there all of the time, and they need jobs that pay them decent wages, because obviously for our rural businesses, you know, people can only shop and buy what they can afford, and if they're earning less wages, they're having less money to put into the local economy. So we need to do a whole number of things for our rural communities around affordable housing, you know, transport, wages and skill levels, to make sure that they can continue to shop within their local area and help those businesses to prosper.
Absolutely. So what's next for you and the RSN? Are you a sort of active campaign going on? What's the sort of the next calls on government as we go into, I guess, spring statement in March and then through into the summer?
Absolutely. I mean, we've just had the local government provisional settlement that we've been campaigning on it's always over the Christmas period, and that consultation is now closed. But the government has said it's looking again at the fairer funding formula this year and how it funds rural services. So that will be our big push to make sure that we're getting the rural voice heard there, and also working with our group of MPs to make sure they've got the right information to be challenging the government on how it works across our rural services, and, you know, how it's allocating funding, how it's developing policy, all of those things, to make sure that that's working well for our rural areas.
Great. And we will, of course, support through our rural shops report, through helping rural retailers meet with MPs and echo those messages, and through the data in the report that I hope shows to everyone looking at rural businesses how important rural shops are to their communities and some of the work they're doing to improve the services that they offer. Kerry, I'll leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate you've got a lot to do today, but really appreciate you joining the podcast, and thanks very much.
That's lovely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again there to Kerry. And a reminder that you can download the full rural shop report on our website. That's acs.org.uk. That's everything for this edition of the Local Shop Podcast, apart from a reminder that we're now less than 3 months away from Summit 22. This is our biggest event of the year. It's easy to forget that we used to do this in person over the last 10, 15 years. We've not done so for the last couple of years, but we're back. We've got some fantastic speakers lined up at the Vox to talk about convenience now, how retailers are separating themselves right now, as well as convenience in the future. So we're looking ahead to 2030 to see what stores are going to be like. Don't miss out. At the Vox in Birmingham, as I say, April 26th for Summit 22. Go to ACS website for all the details. Follow us on Twitter at ACS_local shops. Almost at 5,000 followers there, so be number 5,000. You don't win a prize, but you know, we can sort something out. And subscribe to the podcast so you get episodes before anyone else.